Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is Kale Teeter, and I'm joined today with Russell Young in the, I guess we would call this the European time zone this week. We don't have any of our friends.
Yeah, the sunny UK.
Yeah, from the UK. Sujit and Evan's on vacation, and Sujit, the timing didn't work out for the call today, so I happen to be in the same vicinity as close to Russell, I guess. I'm in London right now, in kind of the downtown area here, staying, working with some partners on a learning platform that we're doing for Azure. But welcome, Russell, and we'll try to make do without the other crew here.
Yeah, thank you. So I was up in London earlier today, but I've come home for the night, so I'll be back up in the city tomorrow, so maybe we can meet up.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we'll go through the news here, and then we've got some kind of Q&A segment that we're going to do with Russell today. And so there are a lot of things going on this week. I think probably the biggest event that's happening this week is WPC, the Worldwide Partner Conference, in I believe it's in Toronto this time. And
that's right.
Lots of news coming out of there about, you know, products, obviously, from Microsoft. And I saw there's a lot of things going on about HoloLens and some future things there. But one of the biggest ones, and we'll put a link in the link dump to, was around some of the innovations and programs for helping partners and customers that came out of the conference. And there's a lot of success stories coming out of there from a lot of different people we've partnered with in the kind of big data IoT space. You kind of name it. So all the way from like Schneider Electric and AccuWeather to some of the opportunities we have with partners with our SQL data warehouse now being generally available. And I'm thrilled to share that the 2016 server and System Center 2016 will launch at Ignite this year. And I believe that's in September. I think the timing for that is. So that's going to bring a lot of new features, the Hyper-V containers, Nano Server, a lot of things that people have probably been seeing in the technical previews, as well as, you know, we're going to bring those on-premises, but also into the cloud. So this is the underlying operating system in Azure, and, you know, looking forward to seeing some of those enhancements and what we're going to be able to build on top of that inside Azure. Lots of news about Azure Stack with Dell, HPE, and Lenovo. Talking about how that's going to work, because the hardware vendors obviously are very close to us with partnering to do the Azure Stack implementations. And I hear a lot out there in the field from partners as well as customers about Azure Stack. They're very interested in that product. I don't know, have you heard a lot about that, Russell?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every engagement I go to, if it's an enterprise customer who's very interested in moving to Azure, but they've got some restrictions. Maybe they've got data policy issues or what have you within the UK. They're looking towards Azure Stack, and there's lots of interest in it. Lots of people very interested. So this cloud platform system that we've been reading up on sounds really, really interesting. The next logical step, I guess, for Stack in the way that they're standardizing the hardware deployments as well.
Yeah, totally. And a couple other ones. The Microsoft Dynamics CRM Online is now GA in the new data center regions of Toronto and Quebec City, and it's already available Azure and O365 in those regions. So I guess right now, so Microsoft has announced 34 regions globally, with 26 generally available. Which I guess the specs work out that's more than pretty much any other major cloud provider. So going for that global reach and penetration in all the different areas.
Yeah. It's big.
Yeah, totally. It keeps growing. We had a couple other things in the news. Any of these kind of stick out to you, Russell?
So the Azure SQL Always Encrypted now generally available as well. So that's quite a handy feature. Very simple to implement. So it gives you that complete confidence again, where the data's encrypted all the way through and the decryption happens just at the point of use. So if you've got somebody that's that's got some very private privately identified information and you just want it to come back to somebody who can view it at their desktop and not anywhere else, then it can be decrypted just at that point, which is really great. Quite a nice feature, and that's all built into the SDK. The other one that caught my eye, the remote debugging of Java apps from within Eclipse or IntelliJ. So straight into Azure, you can step through your code now, like you've been able to do with Visual Studio for some time. But this one always does surprise me a little bit. I don't know if you've ever used these features at all, but I know it's been there in Visual Studio, but I've never tried to use it. I've seen it demoed, but it's one of those things where I think once you've deployed it into the cloud, why do you want to go a bit risky debugging stuff that's up there? Have you had those instances?
Yeah, so a lot of history here. The remote debugger from Visual Studio, even before Azure, I used to use that a lot, and in the areas I used it was mostly around when we were doing something really new, or something we hadn't done before. It's not something where when we would see performance problems or something on a server, I would jump and say that took up a remote debugger, because obviously, as you know, Russell, when we hook something like that up, we basically stop the pipeline of requests. So not a good thing to be doing on production servers, but when we're doing something kind of outside the bounds a little bit, like SAPI filters or, you know, something new in an application and we're kind of debugging it, I've used this feature, you know, where we would basically have to go install that little service that would run on the machine, and then it was always a dance to get this thing working, you know, because it seemed very simple. You would install a binary on your server, and then you had to do this kind of dance around authentication. And then you could connect to it from your local machine, even if you're on the same network. It was quite a bear sometimes to get in, especially like production systems typically aren't in the same domain that, you know, production users using inside an enterprise are using. So there's always that discrepancy of usernames and stuff, and it was always kind of hard to do. And when this came to Azure, I was like, wow, that's awesome, because it was like a one click. We just go in and say, yeah, I want to debug, and it would go ahead and set that session up for us. So I think it's a killer feature, but again, I think it's kind of niche. It's not something you're doing every day, and obviously kind of dangerous in production.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it's a really impressive thing to do a demo of, because it's, you know, the scale of it going from a remote machine somewhere up into the cloud and some remote VM. So being able to see that and show people is really impressive. And the thing I like about this one, obviously, is that whole Microsoft strategy now of saying we're not just supporting Windows and Visual Studio now, we're going for everybody. So including Eclipse and IntelliJ in the same way is really good. And in fact, I've been using, I've been doing some Xamarin programming recently, some Xamarin form stuff. So using Visual Studio Code on a MacBook, for example, and stuff like that, and just finding how easy and nice it is to transition across different machines, different hardware now. It's all coming together. It feels really nice.
That's cool. Yeah, definitely. And kind of along those same vein is the HD Insight tool in the Azure Toolkit for Eclipse is in GA now. So this has been out there in preview for some time. And if you're if you're a Java developer and working with these high-performance or high-compute tools such as HD Insight, this is a great feature, right? So we're, again, back to what you said, Russell, we're integrating this into multiple different IDEs. I think the goal there really is to less friction, right? So we want to make it so that it's easy to use the stuff in the cloud, and you know, not everybody's using Visual Studio, just like you said, and we want to go to where they are and make sure the tools work in an environment they're comfortable with. I know, just off topic a little bit, but working in the blockchain space, what we've been doing, a lot of those people are not, you know, plugged into Visual Studio, but some are, you know, so it's like we kind of had to, it's not a dance, but we're just trying to figure out, like, okay, what makes the most sense, or where are most of the people using this tool, and kind of go to them and try to build tooling around it. I think this is like further example of that, and it allows you to do a whole bunch of stuff for the people that are involved with HD Insight and Hadoop, understanding about how you could build like Spark projects. So we're doing things like, you know, the scaffolding and building out templates, sample code, all these different things in there to develop with IntelliSense, AutoFormat, all the typical stuff you'd expect in an IDE experience, along with kind of management of the cluster to some extent. So you can basically stop stop the application, you can do some testing. So there's a whole variety of features. It's really around making it easy for developers to leverage the IDE they're familiar with and use it with HD Insight.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't my choice to go off and use a Mac for doing system development on Xamarin, but obviously you've got to do it in order to build your iOS apps and stuff. And I was surprised how far it came on, actually, because the last time I was doing stuff, those tools weren't there, and it's just made the whole process much easier. So it's really, really good. And I thought we were going to have a week where you weren't going to mention blockchain, but you've done it already.
Every week it's happening.
You managed to slip it in there somewhere. So, yeah, good stuff. Yeah. So the other thing that I saw that was announced was this a widget for Visual Studio Team Services, which allows you to now import some of the data that you see from App Insights. I know we've done some talks on App Insights before. So App Insights is the service that plugs into your application that's running up in Azure, and it gives you quite in-depth information about all the metrics and the calls and the call stack and database calls and stuff that's going on within your application to give you really great insight. So any information about exceptions and so on is logged up there as well. And you go into the portal and you can go and see graphs and charts, and you can search those metrics and filter by them and what have you. The nice thing about this one is that for a development team that's building stuff and maybe trying it out in different environments within their own company, or possibly they're putting it out as something that they're iterating over quite fast and they want to see how it's going down with their customers, you can now pull those App Insights graphs and charts and metrics straight into your Visual Studio team system or team services dashboard. So you're getting a view on maybe usage or exceptions or performance logs and what have you from the application environments directly within the same area where you collaborate to build your, where you're doing your Scrum meetings and so on. So that's a really nice little improvement there.
Yeah, definitely. It totally makes sense in that keep everything in context. What those tools are designed for from a ALM sense and DevOps sense, that totally fits in that same space, so that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's that area in Visual Studio Team Services as well. I've got to give it some really good credit, because it's just, as a tool for managing your development lifecycle now, is fantastic. I'm just using it all the time. It's one of the main things that I'm doing when I'm in customer deployment sites now, because I'll do a demo maybe on how we do ARM deployments, for example. So ARM being the Azure Resource Manager templates and infrastructure as code. And then you can show people how to put that code into Visual Studio Team Services in the source control and manage it just like you would do normal source control, source code. And then trigger builds off of that. So your environments become something that you're putting through the normal release management process as well. And when people see this and they see that, okay, part of my build now and part of my release management can be also making sure the environment is in sync and has the right template and all my resources are set up correctly and talk to each other properly, it becomes a really strong story. So, since I was last speaking to you guys on this show, DevOps has been probably the hottest topic where I've been engaged with customers.
Yeah, totally makes sense. And the same feedback. Like, I talked to a lot of people out in the field, and a lot of times infrastructure guys, right? So they maybe don't do a lot of day-to-day development work. They do some scripting, and they're kind of seeing that, like, they're like, well, everything seems like it's going more towards development with Azure. And I'm not sure that's 100% true. I mean, there's a lot of work being done, like you said, Russell, around how do we make our applications more resilient? How do we manage the application better? How do we make our builds more immutable, so that, basically it's kind of lights out, right? We don't need to be up there, like, hand-touching the machine. We basically have them scripted out through ARM templates or through the automation of DSC or Chef Puppet, these types of operations. And having a tool like Visual Studio Team System to do that, I mean, it's like, I've had people say, well, yeah, that's for developers, like, to check their code in and stuff. And it's like, no, now we have ARM templates, and it totally makes sense to do it. And, it's very easy to get going. I'm not trying to kind of sell on it, but even for a small team, it's free for 5 users. If you have a bigger team, obviously you have more investment in the space. You could be, MSDN licenses, but I don't know that there's an excuse not to be using that to basically version your infrastructure.
No, and the thing is, it's so easy now. It used to be, you know, with the previous build system before VSDS came along in TFS, putting those AML builds together was quite an arduous task. It was quite difficult, time-consuming. If something went wrong, it was hard to debug. But with this new build and release management system, it's just so easy. You can get it set up for a customer, you know, within minutes for a fairly simple deployment and show it working through end-to-end. It's just a really impressive thing. And having it linked through to the work items and what have you. So what I'm finding now is the discussion seems to be changing in the whole ALM dynamics within the team, so that the developers who used to be frustrated by the lack of being able to get their environments deployed quickly or changed quickly are taking a bit more ownership over how those things should look and be put together. But the ops teams now are getting bought into it as well, because they can see that the tools are going to save them a lot of time and a lot of hassle. So the discussion is changing quite a lot, and the way that the teams work together seems to work a lot nicer now as well. It's not a case of just developers chucking code over the fence anymore. It seems to be a whole more joined up process, which is really nice to see. I don't know if you're seeing the same thing when you go into customers.
Yeah, similar things. And so this episode, I think what we wanted to do to kind of jump into the meat of it here was, I think Russell was actually come up with this idea of like kind of like a Q&A type session based on some of the questions that he's been hearing and out there, and kind of walk through, you know, basically some of the viewpoints we have around some of those questions people are asking. So, Russell, I know you'd put together a little list here if we want to kind of walk through some of these, and maybe we could discuss, you know, maybe not answers or but how we would kind of approach it.
Yeah. So one of the questions that I was asked. So I put this out to a fairly large audience, some internal people, some external people as well, and some of it is based off of some of the sort of common questions I get asked on customer sites. So the first one was somebody wrote in and said they've built an environment in their dev subscription, which has got a few different VMs, a web app running app services, a SQL Azure database, a storage account, and a few other bits and pieces. So they've set that all up via the portal, and they want to be able to make sure that they can copy the same setup into test and then into UAT and into production. And they're thinking that this seems like quite a lot of work to do it, and I'm wondering what kind of tools there are out there that can help them with this whole process. So this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the ARM templates, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think if you take a step back and say where we were maybe 2 years ago, before ARM was something that was really prevalent, this was quite a task. You know, it's in the surface, it looks relatively easy because we have an API, right, in the cloud to basically script out via whatever scripting kind of tools that we wanted to use, typically PowerShell for those people in that space. But still, when you do that, the devil's in the details. You know, it was like, well, this is great, we could script this out, but now you have to order everything, and you got to make sure that everything executes, you know, obviously in a proper order. If there's an exception, how do you, you know, handle that? It was quite a task, I believe. I mean, because I've been through this, trying to do this exact operation with customers to say that, because it's very common. They get started, they have like a little POC, they move into maybe like a test environment or a dev environment, and then it starts, you know, going up from there into UAT and production, and they want to make sure that as they fix things, like as we discover and make sure that things are working and configured the way they want, that it stays that way as they go forward, so we're not solving the same problems over and over. But yeah, I mean, from an ARM perspective, the thing that I could offer from advice is make sure you're using all the latest stuff like V2 and ARM-based resources in Azure, because it will make your life, you know, so much easier.
Yeah. So my advice is, if you're building a new project and it's a greenfield project, then start from the ground up. Start with an ARM template with Visual Studio. Visual Studio gives you all the tools with the SDKs to be able to produce these templates fairly easily. It gives you a nice sort of UI to manage that. You can also use Visual Studio Code. That's got some plugins that will go and do schema validation, give you IntelliSense and all that kind of stuff. So there's some really nice tools to help you build the JSON in the first place, JSON being the format which the ARM templates are built in, and build it up that way. But I would also say use VSTS from day one, so start deploying them via Visual Studio Team Services. So your build process is simply a matter of finding the templates in your source control and publishing them as an artifact. And then the release management side picks up that artifact and then does a call to the ARM provider to go and deploy your template with the various parameters in there. And if you start that way, you start with your dev environment, you know then which parameters you want to put in your environments in the release management part of VSTS, and then you can go and clone that environment to test, modify the things that you need to modify for the test environment, which might just be the resource group, but it's probably going to be the names of the servers, maybe some accounts that you're using as well, and let VSTS take all that hard work of actually doing the deployment, managing your secrets for you, and so on, and it all becomes quite straightforward. If you're starting with an environment that already exists, then that's a little bit harder. But there are tools now within the portal that will allow you to export a template directly, and you can go and see, and you can look at the resources to get the, to see what the JSON looks like. So you can use that, pull those templates out, and then work from those.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially for people who are getting started with Azure, like you said, if I think even if they're getting started, typically what happens is they start using it. Yeah, you know, they start figuring out how to deploy stuff up there through the portal. They typically don't just dive into a script or whatnot, and so they'll get something worked out and kind of refine it over a period of time. And then, and most of the time, these people are not using Visual Studio. These are more infrastructure focused people, so they're using GUIs and PowerShell to do this stuff. So I would say that last point you made is pretty important, that you could. If you did go ahead and start spinning stuff up through the GUI, through clicking through the interface and building it that way and customizing it, definitely that feature for exporting templates is huge, because trying to write ARM templates from scratch is incredibly difficult. It's very easy when you first start, but when you get a big infrastructure, it becomes kind of mind-numbing, kind of going through that, because it becomes hundreds and hundreds of lines of JSON.
Yeah, and that's quite an art to itself in how you go and nest those templates. You can have templates calling other templates and so on and so forth. So to try and break it down and make it a little bit more maintainable. But yeah, no, that's yeah, like I said, that's one of the things I'm spending most of my time doing at the moment, all this kind of ARM template stuff. I did notice as well in the portal there's a templates blade, so a new kind of plugin. I don't know if you've used that at all, but you can basically publish an ARM template now into the portal and then provide permissions to other users of the portal to go and redeploy that template into new resource groups.
I love it. I use this feature a lot because I build, I don't share them so much, but because I'm kind of on my own out here with some things. But when I do something really cool, I can obviously check it into VSTS, but now I can basically keep that template up there live, like in this little repo over there that's live, and I if I need it right now, I can just go over and hit deploy and put in the parameters, and I'm ready to roll. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think you can edit it in the portal as well, can't you?
Yep, totally.
Yeah, straight in there on the web. Excellent stuff. Okay, so the next one was, how do I monitor all my Azure deployments in one place?
So yeah, this is a big question, right? So when we're talking about and I don't know where the context of this, I'll approach it from what I read this as, Russell, but when they come to Azure and say, okay, I had this on-premises environment, or maybe even they're brand new, and they started spinning up a bunch of different things inside of Azure, what tool should I use? I think two use cases. One is they have an existing monitoring infrastructure that they built or used over the years, and they want to kind of retrofit that and see if that can fit into Azure. And on the other side, if it's brand new and they're just deploying new deployments up to Azure right now, how do they kind of monitor that stuff? I think it's kind of two use cases, because we have a pretty good monitoring story kind of natively inside Azure with Operations Manager and App Insights and some of these features with VSTS, like you mentioned before in the news, how those kind of tie in. I think that gives a good story if it's somebody who's doing Greenfield or net new. But if somebody's using existing, my experience has been, and we're migrating something maybe, I don't like to rock the boat so much there when we're doing a migration, because we're already changing a lot about the infrastructure, moving it to the Azure platform. I would much rather try to retrofit and make that work, whether it's an agent-based system, figuring out those details about whether how's it going to work in PaaS, if they're going to start leveraging PaaS components, and just work on the pieces that we need to and retrofit it into the other pieces that we can. But I'm not sure if that was the right context, but that's what I read from that.
Yeah, so... I think you're right. I mean, Ops Manager is the place to go if you're just looking at your Azure IaaS type infrastructure and App Insights for your application, depending on what depth you want to go to. And then there's always the SCOM as well. So if somebody's running System Center, for their on-premise stuff, and they're moving to Azure, and you've got a hybrid, then you can use the Azure Pack plugins for SCOM. I'm not great with those tools. I'm not really that familiar with them. That's not some part of my sort of experience set, but I'm sure you've come across those plugins and used those in the past, the SCOM packs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, actually, I used that tool back when it used to be called MOM. It was like Microsoft Operations Manager. I thought it was really cool because you could basically extend these little agents and then kind of peer into your box. But I think there's a lot of parallels there with App Insights. There's a lot of similarities between those tools. So, yeah, I think it really comes down to, do they have an existing infrastructure of hundreds or thousands of servers that are already using a monitoring system? And now we're going to start into Azure. We probably got to define a strategy for, here's what we're going to do in the short term, and here's how we're going to grow to something longer term, probably moving more towards a cloud-based monitoring platform as they get further down the line, so that they can reduce kind of the on-premise maintenance and things with that.
Yeah. And again, for Greenfield, if you've only got a small application or a small application deployment being built up in Azure, then you've got the ability within the portal to create new dashboards. So you create a dashboard specifically around what you want to monitor within your application. So you could just put all the assets to do with your production environment up there, for example. And then start producing the graphs and queries that you want, that you're interested in, and pin those into that dashboard. And then you've got a place you can go and stick that up on your screen in the office somewhere, always on, so monitor from that. And then obviously the portal's got all these nice things where you can hook PowerShell jobs or runbooks off of certain events bits that get triggered as part of those audit logs and happenings within your monitoring suite as well. So there's lots of extendability in there.
Cool. Yeah, I saw one other one you had in here that is kind of close to me, that I've done a lot of work over the, I get approached with this quite common, and I do it a lot, and that's around copying data around. So I think your question was, what was the best ways to copy data between storage accounts? Potentially if we need to do manual backups or duplicate copies of metadata. Where I typically run into this is images. So obviously copying blob data is one thing, where it's like application type level details and data. But like when we're spinning up virtual machines, and we basically, in some cases on premises, we go ahead and create the image, the golden image that we're going to use for our operating system, and then we can generalize that, and we can basically put that in Azure and start using that to mint new machines. And not only that, once we say, okay, now we have different subscriptions or different environments up there in Azure, how do I kind of share that image around to do that? And I don't know about you, but the tool I always go back to that's kind of the Swiss Army knife for this for me is AZCopy.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, from the on-premise, it's still a story, right? So I think what AZCopy gives you when you're coming from on-premises to the cloud is the restartability. So if something happens and it hiccups when you're uploading that 30-gig file, they do have a journal kind of on that upload, so that we can basically restart in the middle. And when you're doing it up in the cloud, it's a no-brainer, because once it's in a storage account and you want to move it to any storage account, whether it be another one inside your subscription or in a different subscription or whatnot, you can do it server-side is the thing to remember with AZCopy. You don't want to be dragging 30 gig back down to your box and then back up to in Azure just because you want to move it to a different.
Yeah, not to mention the egress cost you're going to possibly pick up as part of that data coming out and then back up again. So yeah, I think this came about. We had a use case whereby there was a company that had a vast amount of data in various storage accounts in blob storage, and they wanted to move it between one subscription and another. And the way that they were doing it was kind of using, I think they were using Visual Studio maybe, or some one of the Cloud Explorer tools, dragging the files down to a temporary storage location on their local area network, and then dragging them back up again using a similar kind of tool. So they came and they asked us, what's the best way of doing this? And even with the amount of data that they had, even using AZCopy was going to take an awful long time. So we started looking at various different mechanisms and means of trying to scale this up on the cloud side. So this is one of my colleagues got involved, and he's produced a blog post on it and a proof of concept tool around various ways of doing it. But it's amazing how many different ways you can think of to copy data once you're up in the cloud. So we looked at using Azure Functions. We looked at using cloud services, Azure Batch, all these different things to try and, you know, find out, you know, stick a blob file name or a URL onto a queue and then have some services pick it up underneath and scale that up massively. But then, you know, you come across limitations with storage account IOPS and so on and stuff like that. But interesting problem, and there's so many different ways to crack those eggs.
Yeah, totally. I noticed, okay. I noticed you had a couple questions in here, or questions, I guess, from people about V1 and kind of compatibility issues. Maybe you can walk through those a little bit.
Yeah, so one of the questions was about VMs that are V1, because they built them in a time when Classic and V1 and ASM was the only thing that was out there. So there was the news the other week of some of the migration tools that have just gone GA that help with that migration to V2 and Resource Manager. But the question was, you know, why do I need to bother? Why do I want to move my VMs from Classic to Resource Manager? What benefit am I going to get out of doing that?
Yeah, well, I you know, it's funny. Today I was talking to some people about this exact same question. Someone had said, I wanted to show you something, and showed me the portal, and they were using the old portal and had V1 machines in there. And I was like, wow, I still got some stuff in cloud services and V1. And it's like, yeah, I haven't moved them over yet. And it was just kind of like that thing of, like, I just assumed people would move to ARM just because of all the benefits you get from it. I mean, just like the stuff we've been talking about with ARM templates being, like, so important. But the flexibility that you gain by going to the V2 or the ARM-based VMs is vastly superior to what we had before. Many, many times if you did stuff before when you set up cloud services or VNets when they were originally out there, you basically had, if you had to make a change to it, it was very fragile. It was very coupled together very tightly. So basically, you had to destroy stuff to redo it. So you would have to script out however you had it built, destroy it, make the tweak that you wanted to make, and then rehydrate everything. I think for me, that's probably enough reason to go through what you need to migrate those from V1 to V2.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the other things is the consistency. So that you're using the same APIs to do everything. You've got the same role-based access controls and so on. So everything's all nice and controlled in the same way and managed in the same consistent way. And there's lots of changes as well, lots of new features that got into the V2 side of things that aren't in V1. So we all kind of know that V1 is not going to be developed further. So, you know, it makes sense to move to V2 when you can.
Yep. Totally.
Okay, I think we've kind of moved around lots of different subjects here, haven't we? But I guess that's the point of it, trying to wrap up some of the questions and things that may have come over just changes that happen incrementally over the months.
Yeah, you had one other one highlighted here I wanted to touch on before we go, but it was a question I get asked a lot too, like, where do I go to, like, stay plugged into what's happening in Azure?
Yes, yeah, good one.
It's like, is there an RSS feed that I can just follow that has everything on it, and then I'll be up to date? And I'm like, you know, to use the analogy of the fire hose, that's exactly what that would be. So you probably maybe don't want that exactly. You probably need to kind of narrow in your focus a little bit on what things are you kind of most passionate about in Azure. I think it's good to have a good, like, 100, 200 level to some extent on what services are out there and how they're kind of evolving, but there's too much. It's very hard to be an expert in everything in Azure. In fact, I don't even know if that's possible. I mean, it's so big now. So I think it's kind of pick your poison a little bit. There's obviously the public blogs that we have out there from Azure, which is fed directly from our product group and from people in the field as well. I think those are really key things. There's some great MSDN blogs out there and TechNet blogs. Maybe we can drop a couple in the show notes of ones that we could recommend that people to follow to kind of stay plugged in here. But from that standpoint, I mean, obviously things like the Azure podcast and not just our podcast, there's others out there that basically are talking about all these new features. It's probably good to subscribe to a few of those. I mean, it's so much. You kind of got to pick your battles there around which things you want to kind of stay really, really up to date with and be, like, right on the cutting edge, and then kind of know the other stuff at kind of a general level.
Yeah, there's so many different depths, isn't there? So you can pick up on the blog and just read the highlights and see what's new, and maybe there's something that takes your fancy, and then before you go and dig in, get some more information up. I always point people at the podcast because I love it. It's great. I think you do a really good job. The other one that I point people at is one that our sort of partners type group look after or created called cloudandproud.info. I don't know if you've come across that.
Yeah, you know, at the thing I'm working with, I don't know his last name, Dan is here, who has a big part in that.
We call him Azure Dan.
Azure Dan, yeah, he's there, and I had no idea that it even existed. This is, you know, what happens, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, he's got a lot of really great content up there, and videos, and all kinds of neat stuff up there, so that's super awesome.
Yeah, it's Daniel Baker's his name. He works over in the UK in the SMS&P area. But yeah, it's a really great site. And what I like about it, again, it's very it's nice to be able to find stuff. When you do find it, you get a quick video clip that shows you, you know, it's a little session on an overview, a bit like the podcast, but you've got some video presentation on there as well. So yeah, that's another good one if you want to start learning up on certain topics at a kind of a higher level to get into it.
Yeah, the other one that is pretty common is the Azure Fridays, and we have a bunch of stuff on Channel 9. If you go up to Channel 9 on MSDN, there's tons of Azure stuff up there. Way too much to consume for one person, but the Azure Fridays are kind of cool because they do something very similar. They kind of take bite-sized chunks and kind of tell you a little bit in a video format about what's going on here about a particular service. So I think they're pretty cool when you're at your computer and you have, you know, access to kind of watch a video and kind of get engrossed in it that way. I think great source, yeah. And it has great presenters there, you know.
Yeah, and just while we're on sort of readiness and education, if you, I think one of the things, if you're looking to get into Azure and you've not done much of it before and you want to get a really good understanding of it, there's three courses that Microsoft do for the MCP. 7532, I think, is the first one. There's three there. There's one about infrastructure as a service, there's one about developing solutions in Azure, and then there's one about architecting solutions for Azure. But if you want to get into Azure, and particularly on the infrastructure side and ARM templates and stuff like that, I think that's a really good course to go and do. And the MBA site has got material specifically aimed at those kinds of certifications, so it gives you a really good broad understanding of how Azure is put together, how it works, and how to go about managing stuff in there.
Yeah, and I think what we should do, we'll put together a couple of these links for the things we just talked about here, so that people have them, so they'll be in the show notes, and you can refer back to them if you want to go dig them up or you weren't aware of them.
Yeah, I've got some links on best practice guidance for ARM templates as well that we'll stick in there, since we've been talking about that quite a bit.
Awesome. Well, I think we've done a lot here, Russell, and I really appreciate all these questions and you participating. This has been this was awesome, and I hope our listeners find this helpful. I think it was pretty good.
Great. Yeah, no, it's good to have you over in the UK. Hopefully, maybe I'll catch up with you before you go back. How long are you here for?
Yeah, I'm here till I'm here two more days, and okay. I've had some of the eats over here. It's awesome. I had some shepherd's pie, so I had some of the what we call conical UK or this side of the ocean thing. So it's good times. I really enjoy it.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Russell.
All right. Thank you very much.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.